Offering humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. After the Bhajan Tutor class, it is time in our Thursday live today for our weekly series where we study Swami's discourses. The 1990 Samukkos series is what we are at right now. And we are at the 12th discourse in that series, where after speaking about the various instruments that a human birth is endowed with, Swami is coming to the importance of what these instruments have to be used for. In other words, Swami is speaking about the importance of self-knowledge. This week, to join me in hosting the show, I have with me Brother Hari from the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, not new to our episode of Shravanamanan Didyasnam. So I welcome him to join me in this episode. Sai Ram Hari.
Sai Ram Prem.
A very interesting topic indeed, and that's the least I can say about it.
Yes.
There's some very profound points which Swami makes here. The last discourse was, in a sense, a earth-shattering one, I could say, because that was the discourse where Swami said, what sadhana can you do? Mm-hmm. You know, what effort can you do with all these things which are unreal to attain the real?
Yes.
So, a discourse where a lot of preconceived notions and a lot of accepted, things which we feel that these are all what make a person spiritual. These are all what make a person one who is in the path of sadhana.
That is Swami getting tough and real with us.
Right. And putting in other words, like Rangarajan sir, who is here with us for completely of that discourse, right. He would say that these are all essential, qualities, but not sufficient ones.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, and here again, Swami continues in that sense about self-knowledge.
Right. And I was just thinking, the institutions run by Bhagwan, especially the educational institutions. If you see the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, it is a unique institution in many ways. But just look at this. This is the only chancellor who at the benedictory discourse or the benedictory address that he gives at the time of convocation, he says that all the degrees, all the knowledge that you have acquired, the degrees that you have attained, the grades that you have got, all of these are completely useless. He says the real knowledge that you have to gain is the knowledge of the self, that is the atmic knowledge that Swami is transmitting through these discourses.
Right.
Just imagine, like where you have so many people who deliver the convocation address, and they exhort you to use all the resources you can so that you can become successful, famous, or rich. And this is a person who so simply says that none of this really has value in my eyes. And I will hold you as my own child that day when you aspire to this knowledge.
Right. You know, many times when Swami speaks about this very concept, he would say, the birds and beasts can fill their stomach and they don't have these degrees which you are, clamoring after. So if this process is being offered to you, what it has to lead you to is something much more than that. Something which is beyond the reach of these beasts and animals.
Hmm.
And in fact, the vision statement of the university, when we are talking about the university, there it says that these degrees are only pretexts.
Yes.
Very, very clearly Swami says that I have drawn you here to give you self-knowledge. I have drawn you here to give you, put you on the path of self-realization.
Mm.
And I'm sure many of us as students did not read that vision statement. I wonder if I had read it then, whether I would have made bold to join Swami's university.
Right.
But that is what Swami did, and that is the beauty of the way Swami offered that self-knowledge to us, because it was so well packaged. And just as we were talking a while ago, Swami made us understand that spirituality is actually the happiest thing. It's about finding your joy in life.
Hmm.
And that is where Swami, I think, drew all of us to the concept of learning about yourself, knowing yourself and understanding yourself.
And as you see the world around us, like it makes it more and more real, the need for us to kind of look at what the spiritual message, what is the message that Swami is trying to give us. You know, Prem, I wanted to share this with you and as well as our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day I was reading a study, and this is funded by NASA, the National Aeronautics Space Agency in
the US,
in United States, yes. So they had a funded study, and the conclusion that was that they came, it looks like a doomsday prediction, but they said that industrialized civilization, including the one that we live in today, is headed for a collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not like it's not a doomsday prediction by, you know, some religious fanatic, but this is from a very rational study that was done, funded by NASA. And look at the reasons that they give for this collapse. They have studied the collapse of earlier civilizations like the Roman civilization, the Han dynasty in China, okay, the Gupta Empire in India. So all of these, they say the collapse was inevitable. And the reason was human nature. So if you, they identified two reasons why such a civilization collapses. And one is the stretching of resources. So wherever we congregate, we tend to, you know, really suck the earth out of everything that it has to offer.
Right.
And then there's the economic inequality. You know, like it's not that what is the resources that are there are shared, you know, somewhat equitably among the people. There's like a glaring inequality. And if there is a primary part of the human nature that people pointed out as they read the study, they say it is just greed. Greed. And this is a human nature. I mean, it cannot be called good or bad, but that's how we are designed. And so hence there's a need for us to keep dwelling on some of these things that divine masters or avatars like Swami, they tell us, because there's a very real need for us to really look at what we are doing and got to bring a shift in what we are doing, transform what we are doing.
Right. In fact, when Swami spoke about, was speaking about the body, Swami said that every culture has an aspect of its, you know, teaching where they say the body has to be given its due importance. And Swami referred to the Roman civilization, and Swami referred to the other civilizations where to nurture the body was a very important part of the culture.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere there we were discussing, and Swami was also making the mention, that when you lose the sight of why this has to be done, why the body has to be taken care of, and that's where you're heading the wrong way.
Yeah, you have a runaway problem on your hands.
Right. And if you look at Indian culture, I'm not saying that we as Indians are sticking to that assiduously, but in the Indian culture, you have the concept of yoga, the asanas, yoga asanas, as we say. But that is just one part of the ninefold path.
Right.
Right, it's asana, pratyahara. There, it is just one aspect, and it is very clear that this is all done so that you reach the ultimate state.
Right.
And as you're saying that, that is what Swami is telling here. Swami is saying that you have, the whole world is constituted of the kshetra and kshetrajna. And you have to understand that this kshetra is given only so that you turn to kshetrajna. So once you understand that the role of these upadis, then you will head towards the right knowledge.
Right. And, you know, time and again, see, just as you are mentioning this, kshetra and the kshetrajna, and how the kshetra leads to the kshetrajna. And Swami talks about kshetra as fields, you know, there are various fields. The body itself is a field in its own right. And as you mentioned, like Swami did mention, like how that it is so important for us to nurture our body and the reasons for that, of course. But by fields, like there are so many fields that we indulge in, like in our daily work, our family life, that is a field. There are so many fields to keep looking at. And we must really understand that us to do the karma that is involved in being in these fields, there is a particular end to it. It's not the karma as such or the results that we get in those particular fields.
Right.
There is, as Swami is pointing out, the ultimate result back there is the kshetrajna, knowing that particular person. So that is the importance of the daily work that we involve in.
Right. And the other point which Swami mentioned, especially in this discourse, is, you know, where he says that when you talk of kshetra and kshetrajna, you're talking about the manifest prakriti and the unmanifest, the divine, the primordial being.
Yes.
Whatever you wish to refer to it as. But Swami is saying also, as you said, the body is also the kshetra.
Yes.
And then Swami went on to say that because the body has in it every aspect of the sentient and insentient nature of what is outside you. And this is something which is scientifically we are coming more and more to. You know,
right.
Anything you want to understand, you look at how the human body does it. You want to do networking, you look at the brain and see how neural networking happens.
Or how nature does it.
How nature does it, right. Yeah. And I think it's a very common example in chemistry I can give from is, a very important process in chemistry, in industrial chemistry, is catalysis. And invariably we turn to enzyme action in the body. Because that is supposed to be the best form of catalysis we can ever think of.
I see.
So we try to ape what happens in the body.
Right.
So when Swami says that whatever happens outside in the universe, an aspect of it is actually in your body.
It's mirrored in your body.
It is very true.
Right.
Like the other day, a lecture on neuroscience, there he says, if you look at the number of neurons in your brain and the number of connections these neurons make, the permutation and combinations put together, it is more than the number of particles in the universe. So that idea of the infinite being in the finite is actually seen in the human body, even biologically, if you look at it. And that was a very profound point which Swami made in that earlier part of the discourse. And then Swami spoke in length about the difference, the different types of knowledge and self-knowledge, how self-knowledge is different from all of that. And how at some point you have to discard all those knowledges. Swami said practical knowledge, common sense, and bookish knowledge. And a very strong point differentiating this, Swami said, every other form of knowledge is actually based on duality. And only self-knowledge is something which is beyond the individual. And then Swami went on to say the role of the mind in all these knowledges. Swami said everything that you see and observe in the universe is a result of the distortion of the mind. But this self-knowledge, you begin to move towards the self-knowledge after the annihilation of the mind.
If I can interject over here, you know, this it brings to mind a very interesting lecture that I was just listening to the other day. And this is from a very reputed expert in the field of leadership. He's a professor from Harvard, Michael Jensen, and he was talking about, you know, the how there's been a disconnect between what is taught, the knowledge that that is imparted to the students in the classrooms, and the way they actually practice it in their daily lives. And he said, for example, for many years they've been teaching like ethics and you know, corporate governance. These topics are taught to management students in Harvard. And he said, just look at the number of Harvard students who are in jail today because of financial misappropriation. He, of course, he meant it as a joke. But then he said he can see how they have not been really doing their duty into imparting what is true ethics. They have imparted the knowledge of ethics, of course, and the students have gone away knowing they can even discourse on ethics. But it, when it actually came down to work, doing, applying it in their daily lives, there was some gap, there was some disconnect. And he saw more and more, he says, over his 25 years of teaching, that really what they should have done is to have worked on the people themselves, on the being. He says that that is what was missing in all the education that was going on, that they never worked on the person who is receiving that information, such that when they walk out of that hall, they are people who are ethical. And you can see the beauty of Swami's education, that time and time and time again, he keeps getting back to inquiring as to who you truly are. And he says that is a source for you to lead a life. You acquire all this knowledge, but for you to lead a life in which you can apply that knowledge in the way it is meant to be, that the source of that is the knowledge of the self.
It just a thing which we observed in Prashanti Nilambaran Swami is that when in front of Swami, everything else paled out. Like, you know, you might have, you might be a very good singer, you might be a very good, but the right importance you got was the importance which Swami gave. And that kind of evened out all your achievements. You know, you could be a watchman sitting there, you could be the collector of the district sitting there, but you, you were what you were when the way Swami responded to you. And that, if you were to replace Swami with the self, you know, a society which believes, as you said, that, you know, one thing is the individual is not being focused at. The other thing is the society is not giving you the right culture to believe that, yes, this is what has to be done. Because this strongly comes to my mind when Swami says that, you know, Swami says, Deva Preeti Sanganiti. Okay, and because why would Swami differentiate something like Papa Bhiti, I'm sorry, the fear of sin from Sanganiti? Because Swami was telling Sanganiti is something like the law of the land. There is only a certain amount of regularity the law of the land can bring. But the rest of it has to come from the fear of sin or the love for God. So I think that can happen only when there is a tacit understanding in the society saying that these are things which we will not accept. These are things which if you do, you will not be looked up in the right, you know, with the right light. So that, that kind of a thing is actually what helps. Going to the other points, and then Swami goes on to speak about the concept of aham in between, where Swami says that beyond all this, beyond all your form, you know, at a certain point you're a child, later you're a youngster, then you're an old man, something which is constant is that aham. Right. Then Swami says the different stages of consciousness, you know, when you're awake, when you're asleep, when you're deep sleep state, that which is common is again that aham.
Right.
So you will have to focus on that and inquire into who that aham is.
Yes.
Where is what is the source of that voice?
Otherwise, all our attention is being taken up by what goes on outside.
Right.
You know, you're never made aware of what is that constant presence that is there.
Right.
And such a puzzle that we don't really inquire into, okay, so what is this constant presence? What is its role?
Right. And then Swami goes on to say that aham, when it attaches itself to an akaram, which is a form, then it becomes ahankaram.
Right. Okay.
And then he says, as you said, you know, all the effort goes in looking at and judging the akaram. The aham is lost.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
That's where the disparity comes in, maybe. And then Swami at length spoke about how there is nothing called free will.
And, very important topic.
Right. And I think a part of it was spoken even in the previous discourse. Where Swami speaks at length about, you know, can you ask your heart to stop beating?
Right.
Or if the heart chooses to stop beating, can you make it beat?
Right.
Or do you have any control over any other activity which happens in your body?
Absolutely. Now, there's again, you were speaking about neuroscience. It has a very beautiful, interesting study that they did.
Mm-hmm.
You see, like any reaction that you do, you know, supposing, like say right now you're maybe, you know, you're scratching your head, or some listener is like raising his hand, anything that happens, you know, when they ask you, you know, when do you think that you made the decision to maybe raise your hand?
Okay.
And you'll say, you know, just now, maybe, you know, 1 second before.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that the body, the brain has actually initiated the entire process of whatever is required for you to lift your hand. At times it seems 7 seconds before you become aware of that decision. So the thing called you, yes, it doesn't waste time in actually relaying that information to whatever you call as yourself. It's already, so what I want to say is, like, many people, they pride themselves upon even the kind of attitude that they have, or the kind of resources that are available. But I like to look at it in terms of chaos theory, that, like, how many things really had to come together in order for that to get done.
Right.
And really once, I remember Swami used to talk about this particular incident from the Mahabharata. And this is right at the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord Krishna has been the charioteer to Arjuna throughout the war. And at the, like, every single day, it would be Lord Krishna who would instruct Arjuna that he has to get off the chariot first, and only then Krishna would get off.
Right.
Till one day Arjuna, like, he, right at the end, he questions, you know, he says he has forgotten that his chariot is none other than the Lord, and he says, no, it must be first you who has to get off and then help me off the chariot. That is your duty.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lord Krishna keeps saying no, 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 and then at the end he says, okay, like, if that's what you truly want, let me do it. And the moment Krishna gets off the chariot, at that time the chariot bursts into flames. And then Krishna explains, all this while it is I who have been absorbing the arrows that have been pointed towards your chariot. And if, had I not done this, your chariot would have been burst. You with the chariot would have been destroyed during the war itself. So that is how, you know, we do not even understand the role that Lord has to play in every one of our destinies.
In fact, one of the spiritual masters, he says, the only thing he would suggest as a sadhana is, he would say, before you go to sleep, you know, when you sit on your bed and you're about to call it a day, he would say, just recollect all the events which happened in that day, in the course of that day, all the things which you did. And ask yourself how many of those things that you really did.
Yeah.
You know, because even in a very superficial way,
yes,
how many of our actions are driven by the circumstances?
Absolutely.
Are driven by what is the situation we've been played into?
Yes, it's totally a function of the circumstances and our response to that.
Right.
And as neuroscience proves, we really literally have very little say in what happens.
Right.
In either of these.
So that is a very large part of the clip which we played last week.
Right.
And then Swami goes on to speak a little about the three aspects of the mind or consciousness. Swami speaks about subconscious, conscious and superconscious.
Right.
And the way Swami connected that with the present, past and the future.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, you see a sign, you go to a particular place, you see a temple.
Right.
then much later you recollect that temple.
Mm.
You know, you think of that, the temple comes to your mind.
Right.
So he said, but it happens because it is stored somewhere.
Yeah.
So he's saying that present moment is actually the basis of the past and the future.
Right.
So that is why it makes it so powerful.
Yes.
Your ability to retain that moment will give you all the strength which is necessary to be in that state of being.
Absolutely.
The Swami says that is why he keeps saying that present is omnipresent.
Mm.
And Swami spoke about that. I think that's where Swami ended the last week's clip.
Okay.
So I think, shall we go to the next clip then?
Yes, I think we can start with listening to Bhagavan's discourse.
Kya chinta bhuvi putra mitra bharanau vyapara sambhashane. Kya chinta dhana dhanya bhoga yasasis labhe sada jayati. Sachinta bhuvi nandanandana padadvandvaravindechane. Kachinta yamaraja bhima sadanadvara prayane prabhu. Kachinta bhuvi nandanandana padadvandvaravindechane. Chane, chane, chane. Manamu, dana, danya, bhoga, yasasura nimittamai. Manamu yanta kalamunu viniyogistunnamo.
How much of time are we investing for the sake of earning money and properties and luxuries and name and fame?
Manamu putra, mitra, bharana, vyaparamulakai. Manamu yanta kalamunu durviniyoga parchukuntunnamo.
How much of time are we misusing for the sake of the children, friends?
Aa kalamulo chana kalamu bhagavantuni yokka padaravindamula pai pettadaniki manam krushi chesthe bhima sadana dwara prayane prabhu. Bhima sadana bhayankaramainatundi yokka swarga talupunu kudanu tamantakata tame తెరుచుకొని మనకు స్వాగతం ఇస్తాయట.
ఇఫ్ ఎ మోమెంట్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ కుడ్ బి ఇన్వెస్టెడ్ ఇన్ థింకింగ్ ద లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద డివైన్ లార్డ్ నందనందన, దెన్ ది డోర్స్ ఆఫ్ ది హెవెన్ దెమ్సెల్వ్స్ విల్ ఓపెన్ అండ్ వెల్కమ్ అస్.
కనుక మనము ఈ ఆత్మజ్ఞానమును ఆత్మానందమును పొందవలనంటే దీనికి ఒక్కటే ఆధారం, అదే భక్తి.
If you really want to get the knowledge of Atma and Atma, the one thing that you should have...
Bhakti anaga kevalamu japamulu cheyatamo, dhyanamulu cheyatamo, poojalu cheyatamo, yatralu cheyatamo, inke vidhamainatuvanti yokka satkarmalu acharinchadam, adi kaadu bhakti. Ivanni kudanu kevalamu bhakti ane perito manam anubhavincheyatuvanti yokka chihnamulu, gurtulu.
If you have devotion alone, you can reach it. Then what do you mean by devotion? It doesn't refer to the type of worship, going to pilgrim centers, doing dhyana, etc. These are only actions which symbolize devotion, but not devotion by itself.
Swasarupa sandhanam pai manasunu tishta veyinchatame nijamaina bhakti.
Fixing the mind in getting a vision of your real self is the real devotion.
ఇదే నిజమైనటువంటి ఆత్మదిష్ట.
దాట్ ఈస్ ద రియల్ ఆత్మిక్.
కనుక జ్ఞానమన్నా భక్తి అన్నా వేరు కాదు, భక్తే జ్ఞానము, జ్ఞానమే భక్తి.
దేర్ ఫోర్ దేర్ ఇస్ నో డిఫరెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ జ్ఞాన అండ్ భక్తి, నాలెడ్జ్ అండ్ డివోషన్.
రెండు కూడా ఒకదాని యొక్క సంబంధమైనటువంటి యొక్క అవినాభావ సంబంధమే, అన్యోన్యాశ్రయమే.
దేర్ ఇస్ ఎ క్లోజ్ మ్యూచువల్ రిలేషన్షిప్ అండ్ ఇంటర్ డిపెండెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ దీస్ టూ.
ఈ రెండింటినీ కట్టివేసేటువంటి యొక్క ప్రధానమైనటువంటి యొక్క సూత్రము అదే ప్రేమ. ఈ ప్రేమ సూత్రము చేతనే భగవంతుని బంధించవచ్చు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ దిస్ థ్రెడ్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ విచ్ కెన్ బైండ్ గాడ్ హింసెల్ఫ్ అండ్ గెట్ యూ టు.
అనగా ప్రేమ ప్రత్యేకము కాదు, ప్రేమనే దైవము, దైవమే ప్రేమ.
దెన్ లవ్ ఈజ్ నాట్ డిఫరెంట్ ఫ్రమ్ గాడ్, లవ్ ఈజ్ గాడ్. God is love.
దేహముతో ఏర్పడేటువంటి ప్రేమ క్షణభంగురమైనది.
లవ్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ద బాడీ ఈజ్
మొమెంటరీతో ఏర్పడేటువంటి ప్రేమ ఇది కూడాను క్షణభంగురమైనది.
లవ్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ద డిజైర్స్ ఆల్సో ఈజ్ మొమెంటరీ.
ఇవి కేవలం అన్ని కూడాను తాత్కాలికమైనటువంటి యొక్క ప్రేమలు.
దే ఆర్ ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్లీ ట్రాన్సియెంట్ అండ్
దైవ ప్రేమ అదే శాశ్వతమైనటువంటిది.
ఓన్లీ లవ్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ దాట్ ఈస్ ది ట్రూ లవ్ దాట్ ఈస్ పర్మనెంట్ లవ్.
కనుకనే లవ్ ఈజ్ గాడ్ లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్. నీవు దాని ఎందే నీవు జీవించాలి.
లవ్ ఈజ్ గాడ్ లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్ యూ షుడ్ లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్ అలోన్.
ఎన్ని బాధలు కలిగినప్పటికీ భౌతికమైనటువంటి యొక్క చిక్కులు అనేకం సంభవించవచ్చును కాని ఇవన్నీ కూడా కదిలిపోయే మేఘములే.
దేర్ మే బి సో మెనీ వరల్డ్లీ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్ విచ్ యూ హ్యావ్ టు ఫేస్ బట్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ ఆర్ పాసింగ్ క్లౌడ్స్.
ఈ కదిలిపోయే మేఘముల నిమిత్తమై మనము ఆరాటపడనక్కరలేదు.
Why should we make so much of efforts for the sake of these passing clouds?
సత్యనిత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వాన్ని పొందే నిమిత్తమై మనము తగినటువంటి విచారణ చేయాలి.
We have to undertake inquiry in order to attain the Atma which is truth and which is permanent.
కనుక తమను తాము ఉద్ధరించుకోవాలి.
Each
ఉద్ధరే ఆత్మనాత్మానం అన్నారు.
Each one has to save himself.
చాలా మంది లోకంలో ఈ గ్రంథ పరిచయం చే అయినటువంటి వారు కొంచెము ఛాదస్థ ఆచారములు కలిగినటువంటి వారు కొన్ని భ్రాంతులకు లోబడిపోతుంటారు.
Quite a few people who have book knowledge and who are prisoners of the rituals, they
మమ్మల్ని ఉద్ధరించేటువంటి వారు మా పుత్రులే అని అనుకుంటుంటారు. ఎందుకంటే వాడికి శ్రాద్ధాలు పితృపిండాలు వదులుతూ ఉంటారు, దానివల్ల వీడికి ఉద్ధారం కలుగుతుంది అని వీరి భ్రాంతి.
దీస్ పీపుల్ థింక్ దట్ ఇట్ ఈస్ దేర్ సన్స్ హూ కెన్ సేవ్ దెమ్ బై పర్ఫార్మింగ్ ది సెరిమనీస్ యాన్యువల్ సెరిమనీస్ ఆఫ్టర్ దేర్ డెత్ అండ్ సేవింగ్ దెమ్ ఫ్రమ్ వేరియస్ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్ లేటర్ ఆన్.
కేవలం లోకములో ఎంతమంది పుత్రులు కలిగినటువంటి వారు లేరు.
How many people there are in the world who have number of children?
వీరందరి పుత్రులు ఎంత ఉద్ధారం చేస్తున్నారా?
Are these sons really saving the parents?
పుత్రులు లేనటువంటి వారు ఎంతమంది లేరు?
How many more people there are without sons?
వీరందరూ అధోగతి పాలవుతున్నారా?
Are these people forlorn?
పుత్రులు పుట్టరే కౌరవేంద్రులు కనేకులు వారి చే నేగతిని వడిసిన.
How many children were born to Dhritarashtra as Kauravas? What is it that they did for him?
పుత్రులు లేని ఆ శుకునకు పెంపొందనే దుర్గతులు.
The one who did not have the children, could he not get the salvation?
కాదు కాదు, వీరు కాదు మనల్ని ఉద్ధారం చేసేది.
It is not these sons who really save us.
ఇవి చేసేటువంటి ఆచారములు కూడా యొక్క అర్థాన్ని కూడా మనం గుర్తించుకోవటం లేదు.
We are not even recognizing the real significance and meaning of these rituals.
సత్యార్థాన్ని మనం గుర్తించుకున్నప్పుడే నిత్యతత్వాన్ని మనం అనుభవించవచ్చు.
ఓన్లీ వెన్ వీ అండర్స్టాండ్ ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ ట్రూత్ వీ కెన్ రియలీ అండర్స్టాండ్ అండ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ థింగ్స్ ప్రాపర్లీ.
శ్రాద్ధము అంటాం మనం.
టేక్ ది వర్డ్ శ్రాద్ధ.
ఏదో ఒక బ్రాహ్మణ్ణి పిలిపించటము, అతనికి పాదాలు కడగటము, వానికి పొట్ట నిండా అన్నం పెట్టడము, వానితో మనం ఏదో అత్యంతలు వేయించుకోవటం, ఇది శ్రాద్ధం అయిపోయింది అనుకుంటాం.
వీ కన్సిడర్ దట్ దిస్ శ్రాద్ధ సెరిమనీ ఈజ్ సఫిషియెంట్ బై కాలింగ్ ఎ బ్రాహ్మిన్ గివింగ్ హిమ్.
శ్రాద్ధం అనగా శ్రద్ధతో కూడినటువంటిది అని అర్థం.
శ్రాద్ధం రెఫర్స్ టు ద వన్ విచ్ ఇస్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ రియల్ ఇంట్రెస్ట్ అండ్ శ్రద్ధ.
శ్రద్ధ అయితే పిండము అనగా ఏమిటి?
దెన్ వాట్ డూ యూ మీన్ బై పిండం?
పిండధారములు చేస్తున్నారు.
యు ఆర్ ఆఫరింగ్ దిస్ పిండము.
పిండం అనగా దేహమే.
దిస్ వర్డ్ పిండము రెఫర్స్ టు ద బాడీ.
శ్రద్ధతో మన దేహం అనేటువంటి పిండాన్ని భగవంతునికి అర్పితంగా ఉంచడమే నిజమైన శ్రాద్ధం.
ద ట్రూ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ రియల్ శ్రద్ధ ఈజ్ ఆఫరింగ్ దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ యాజ్ ఎన్ ఆఫరింగ్ టు ద లార్డ్. దట్ ఈస్ రియల్ శ్రద్ధ.
That was the first clip of the day.
Yeah, so a number of wonderful points, and if the listeners really want to know, there was one point of time where both of us are looking at each other open-eyed because of the wonderful insight that Swami was giving us during this particular section of the discourse. In fact, one of the so-called divisions of different kinds of paths to the Lord, this Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Swami is actually putting together so nicely that how both of them have a very common basis called love. And the point which you mentioned, Swami has taken it up in the earlier discourses, that what we normally consider as the path of bhakti, that is japa, that is chanting Lord's name, dhyana, meditation, and pilgrimages, which is what we usually resort to in the name of bhakti. He says none of these are really bhakti, but just manifestations of bhakti. At times you may be only, you know, pleasing yourself that I am on this path. But Swami, he is saying that true bhakti is fixing of mind on what is the truth, on the self. In fact, this brings to mind one very amazing definition Swami gave of brahmacharya.
Okay.
And brahmacharya, as we commonly understand it, is celibacy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get married. You right. stay a bachelor and, you know, stay away from lust. So that is what is commonly understood as celibacy. And Swami gave a very beautiful definition that takes it to the very next level. He says, brahmacharya, what does it mean? Something that is your mind is always, it is revolving around or is fixed on. Chara means to move.
Right.
So it always moves around this one thing called Brahman. So your mind has to always fix itself on Brahman. He says, that is a true brahmachari. It's not merely a celibate. So you can see how Swami actually brings us to the true meaning of bhakti. He doesn't stop us at mere actions. He keeps having us focus on the intention. What is the intention behind what is being done? And I can say that, you know, Swami says so beautifully that true bhakti is merely fixing your mind on the self. And he brings the next point, which is that the common thread for both bhakti and jnana, that is the path of devotion and the path of knowledge, both of them have their basis as love. And what is this love, you know? So why would he say something like this? And Swami says it so nicely. He says both are essentially love. One, the path of jnana is one that is pointed at the formless truth. And the other, the path of bhakti, is something that is pointed towards the embodiment of truth. That's the only distinction there can be between these two.
And you know, when Swami speaks about love and the path of jnana being one and the same, a very common thing which Swami has also mentioned earlier is, when you say Swami has love, what do you mean by that? You know, when you say that Swami is all loving or Swami is the embodiment of love, which means that Swami is absolutely selfless. We don't say it that way, but we know it in our mind that we are talking about the Swami's selfless nature.
Right.
Because here is Swami who can give without bounds. He can give without seeking anything in return. And that is why we say that this is Swami's love.
Absolutely.
We don't have a different word for it. It is Swami's love. But when we say, let us say that I say I love an object, or let me say that I love so and so, a person like this, I'm automatically saying that I like to have that thing with myself.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm saying that I like to keep it to myself. I am happy when that thing or that person is around.
Yeah.
So automatically the idea of devotion, which we say that I love God, is based on this idea that just like, oh, I would like to possess some other object, I want to possess God.
Yeah, I want to have Him for myself.
Right, but what love which Swami is talking is the love which He had.
Yeah, and really just before we go into the next part, as I can see that's where you're leading to, I just want to mention that very often when this topic would come up in, I remember very informal sessions, Swami would give a very good example of Shankaracharya himself. He would say Shankaracharya is the embodiment of, or he used to propagate the Advaita philosophy, which many consider to be dry jnana, the core, what shall I say, like uncompromising path of wisdom. And he says, yet a person like that, he is the one who has composed such beautiful songs like Bhaja Govindam, which exhorts you to actually sing the name of the Lord. And the Madhurashtakam, these are all compositions by Shankaracharya. So he says, how do you reconcile these two unless you really see the truth that is there behind the two, that there is no difference between these two paths?
Yeah, I think before we go into the rest of the discourse, that point which Swami made, and you also made a mention, that how we get carried away by what are the expressions of devotion and mistake them to be devotion per se.
Yeah.
You know, when Swami says they're going to the temple and doing archanas and doing pujas, there's a wonderful incident where there is a veena expert, an exponent in playing veena. She goes to a spiritual master and she submits to him and asks that, Master, can I reach God through my music?
Hmm.
He says, I'm a very good musician and I serve music. Can I reach the ultimate? Can I reach God through music?
Hmm.
He says, no, you can't. And that lady is surprised. She said, but what about so many who have reached?
Hmm.
You know, you have Meera, you have Tyagaraja, you have all these saints, these, songster saints who have reached God through their music.
Hmm.
Then he said, no, you've got it wrong.
Hmm.
He said, these were people whose devotion expressed in music.
Who had reached God.
Who had actually reached the higher state and right. Their devotion and love for God expressed itself in music.
Yes.
It does not mean that if you focus on music, you can get what they got.
Yes. Actually, it puts in mind wonderful Zen story that is spoken about. You know, they ask like, you know, what? How do I meditate?
Mm-hmm.
So when a person is asked like, how do I meditate? One of the things we talk about is like, this is the posture that you have to adopt. You have to put your hands in this particular fashion. And we really don't have that experience of meditation even when we sit in that particular pose and follow whatever practice it is. Till we actually realize that meditation is a way of life for a realized person. It's not that it has a particular end in itself. He or she is really not trying to get anything out of meditation. It's a very natural way of being. So if you see a person like that who's seated in that particular pose, it's because it's so natural for them to be that way.
Right.
Whereas we are merely trying to imitate that without really getting what is the process or what is happening in the background.
I think that is one of the reasons why you have an imagery of Lord Shiva, you know, meditating.
Mm.
Now, why would you have, imagine if you were to have the picture of Swami in your altar, where Swami is praying, Swami is doing some puja.
Yes.
You always have Swami in a benedictory pose, you know, where Swami is offering. But you have this idea of the Shiva in the Yogishwara pose, where he's sitting engrossed in meditation. I think that is essentially what you were trying to say here, because here is somebody who is in the ultimate state, who's that state which cannot be expressed in any other form. It just expresses itself in a person who is being absorbed and seated in meditation.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah. And the next part, if we can move on to what Swami was speaking about. Swami is talking about, he's distinguishing now, having spoken about love as the basis for bhakti and jnana, he's now distinguishing what he means by love itself. So it is not love as we understand in the common parlance. So what he distinguishes that, this is not the love that we have for our relations, you know, is for our body. In other words, a worldly love. And the reason for that, he says, it is transient. Like it is not something as we ourselves experience this in our relationships with any particular thing. It may be with people around us or with anything that we hold dear to us. There is a point in time when we begin to question, okay, how did I get into this particular relationship? Or why did I start liking this particular job? Or why did I start liking this particular subject? You know, any of these questions, is there all this there is to it? You know, many of us, we have that question. So Swami says, like, that is the basis. He says, which is why this is not a true basis. The other one, which you very beautifully brought out actually some time ago, and you said, whenever we say I love something in our, as is commonly understood, when I enter into a relationship, there is actually a hidden agenda, and that is for me to experience that love. There is something that I want to get out of it, which leads us to grief so often, because there is something which is fundamentally departs from the truth. That in fact, we are all the love that we need. There's no other source of love except us. Nothing else is at the basis. And Swami says that this love is nothing but God. This is permanent and it is always there. It is something that we neglect and therefore go in search of. So that is the love which Swami is talking about.
I think, looking at it in a different way, I would say you have two paths here.
Right.
The path of love and as we understand it as bhakti, not as how Swami has put it here beautifully.
Yes.
The path of bhakti as we understand and the path of jnana.
Yeah.
It could be that a jnani, when he sets out, he theoretically knows that everything is one. So his whole endeavor is to understand that I have to realize that everything is me.
Yes.
Or there is nothing which is beyond me. But here is the other path where constantly the effort is to possess something.
Yes.
The constantly effort is to, I need to, you know, either it starts by pleasing the Lord or I have to make the Lord happy with me or I have to obtain something from the Lord. And you come to a point where, I don't need to ask anything because I already have what I have to ask.
Yes.
I don't need to possess this Lord because this Lord is not separate from me.
Mm.
So it's almost like either you come from this side and reach that understanding, or you theoretically know the thing, but you go through the path to
absolutely
realize it.
Yes. There's even when as listening to Swami's discourse, one very nice analogy that came to me. When we talk about Lord Hanuman, mm-hmm. like we look at that very unique relationship that he had with Lord Rama. We call it friendship. It is also one of the, you know, what shall I say, standing embodiments of love. There is the love that existed between the devotee and the Lord. And yet a person like Hanuman, he made this very extraordinary statement that makes us reflect on what love is. And he says, like, actually, this is in response to a question from Lord Rama.
Mm-hmm.
So Lord Rama asked me, like, what is your attitude towards me? What do you think of when you look at me? And Lord Hanuman, like, he gives us such a very profound reply. And he says, when I don't know who I am, I serve you. And when I know who I am, you and I are one. And that is that basis. See, like, the basis for all that we spoke about, bhakti, japa, dhyana, the pilgrimage, the manifestations of bhakti. And at its basis, Lord Hanuman always knew this, that he and Lord Rama were actually one. And yet, at those times when he pretended not to know, the best way of expressing that love was to serve the Lord.
It's actually very beautifully written by, if you've read the series Krishna Avatar by K. M. Munshi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it must be a divinely inspired work, because some of the insights which he gives, mm-hmm. he says that it is a product of my imagination.
Right.
I've taken the basic Mahabharata, but I've poured in a lot of my imagination. But the kind of insights which is put in some of the episodes is very profound.
Beautiful.
And at that point where Krishna is leaving for Mathura, and you know, he's in that situation where he has to go and tell Radha that the call has come and I'm going, and I might never return. So, you know, that is when Krishna makes that offer. He says, you come with me. You come with me to Mathura. Then Radha says that I have no need for that.
Oh.
He says, because you are already mine. You could be here, you could be anywhere.
Right.
But you're already mine, I'm yours.
Right.
I mean, a distance will, if I feel that this distance is going to, you know, hamper the love I have for you, then this is not real love. Then it doesn't matter whether you honor this love or not, because it's not worth that honor.
Yes.
He says, because I have that love which is beyond space and time, it doesn't matter whether I'm here and you're there.
Very profound.
And she says that it doesn't call for you to do that at all. And I think a similar thing happens even with Hanuman, you know, when it is said that Ramavatar is actually coming to an end. The Valmiki Ramayana says that Rama and all his subjects enter into the Saryu River. And that's how curtains are drawn on that avatar. Where actually Rama gives an open invitation to everybody. He says, all of you come, whoever wishes to join me can join me, and we will all enter into the Saryu River. And that is when, you know, one of the persons who will be most eager to join Rama would be Hanuman. And that's when it seems Rama turns to Hanuman and says, you don't come with me. You stay back here and take care of my devotees.
Right.
And Hanuman says, yes, whatever you say.
Oh, okay.
You know, that could be the final offering which you make, which you can make only when you have the firm belief that you're not separate from the Lord who you worship.
Yes.
He says, yes, if it is your will, so be it. You know, it is any day higher than my desire.
Absolutely.
And I think just the last point which Swami made there is the idea of having children
right.
who will give you, you know, who will pave the way to heaven
yes.
for you. It's a very, I don't know if the Western audience will be able to relate to this idea, but it's a very strong concept in Hinduism where it is believed, in fact, that is where that shloka also comes from, where Swami says, Tyagena ekyam tatva manushu. It's not from progeny. Swami mentions that word because it is believed that if you want to reach the heavens, you need children and, you know, grandchildren who will be doing that pinda puja, or what you say, the worship which you do for ancestors.
Yes.
To release you from the state you're
yes.
caught up in.
Yes.
But the wonderful interpretation which Swami gives here, Swami says pindam. Pindam is actually another word for the body.
Mm-hmm.
Pinda, what is offered in the ancestral worship, is the word pinda also refers to the body. Swami says the pindam which you should offer is this body.
Yes. And in the service of
Shraddha is nothing but the Shraddha with which you should offer it to God.
Right.
You know, wonderfully Swami's put it there. So should we go to the next clip?
Yes, I think.
So I think this with this clip we'll be ending this discourse.
I see.
దీనిని వేదాంతమునందు కూడాను మానవ శరీరమునకు తుంగభద్ర అని ఒక పేరు పెట్టారు.
ఇన్ వేదాంతిక్ పార్లెన్స్ ద హ్యూమన్ బాడీ హెస్ బీన్ గివెన్ ఎ నేమ్ తుంగభద్ర.
ఒక నది కూడా ఉంటుండాలి తుంగభద్ర అని.
దేర్ ఈస్ ఎ రివర్ కా బై ది నేమ్ తుంగభద్ర.
ఒక దగ్గర తుంగ ఒక దగ్గర భద్ర రెండు పుట్టి చేరటం చేతనే అతనికి తుంగభద్ర అని పేరు వచ్చింది.
దిస్ నేమ్ is given to this river because one river called Tunga, another river called Bhadra join at a particular place. There
Bhadra anaga,
when you say Bhadra,
manchi pavitramu kalyanamu sobha anetundi arthalu untunnayi.
This Bhadra refers to good, sacred, auspicious,
great. Inka తుంగ అనగా చాలా బలమైన.
దెన్ వెన్ యూ సే తుంగ
గొప్ప,
స్ట్రాంగ్,
విశాలము,
గ్రేట్, వైడ్,
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి అర్థాలు మనం తీసుకోవచ్చు.
దిస్ మీనింగ్స్ మే బి గివెన్ టు దిస్ వర్డ్.
తుంగ భద్ర అనగా ఏమిటి? మంచి కార్యములు చేసేటువంటిది ఈ దేహము, గొప్ప కార్యములు ఆచరించేటువంటిది ఈ దేహము, కళ్యాణ కార్యములో ప్రవేశించేటువంటిది ఈ దేహము, దివ్యమైనటువంటి ఆదర్శాన్ని అందించేటువంటి ఈ దేహము, కనుకనే దీనికి తుంగ భద్ర అని పేరు వచ్చింది.
దిస్ బాడీ హెస్ బీన్ గివన్ ద నేమ్ తుంగభద్ర బికాస్ దిస్ ఈజ్ మెంట్ ఫార్ డూయింగ్ గుడ్ యాక్షన్ అండ్ దిస్ ఈజ్ మెంట్ ఫార్ డూయింగ్ ఆస్పిషియస్ యాక్షన్, గ్రేట్ యాక్షన్, డివైన్ యాక్షన్.
కానీ దీనికి ఇంత గొప్ప పేరు మనం పెట్టుకొని మనం ఆచారం ఏ విధంగా మనం ప్రవర్తిస్తున్నాం?
When we are having such a great name, are we really justifying by our own
actions? Peru matram goppade kaani pravartana chaala alpanga untuntadi.
There is a very great name given but not justified by the action.
Peru taginattuga manam pravartinchali.
We should conduct ourselves in tune with our own name.
Tyagaraju ani peru pochindi.
Name is Tyagaraja.
కానీ నిజంగా అతనికి పేరుకు తగినటువంటి త్యాగం ఉంటుండాలి. ఇది సార్థక నామం.
ద త్యాగరాజ హ్యాడ్ ద రియల్ నేచర్ ఆఫ్ సాక్రిఫైస్. హి హ్యాడ్ జస్టిఫైడ్ దట్ నేమ్.
భోజరాజు అనేక విధమైనటువంటి ఆభరణములు, తిండి పదార్థములు, నిత్య జీవితములకు అవసరమైనటువంటి ఒక వస్తువులు అన్ని పంపించాడు.
King Bhojaraja had all the type of jewelry and all the type of other necessities and luxuries which are required for a happy life.
Chuchadu dannanta nidhi chaala sukhama, Ishwara sannidhi chaala sukhama, nijamugu telipu manasa annadu.
When all these things were sent to Tyagaraja, Tyagaraja looked at them and asked Rama, well, is this wealth permanent, Rama, or is your sannidhi, your lotus feet, permanent for me?
Inte kaadu tana yokka antarbhavamuni yokka hrudaya pavitratanu kudanu chakkaga vivarinchukunnadu.
He also told himself the great meaning of a pure heart in a clear way.
Nee paadadvantamulanu naa rendu hastamulu dwara gattiga pattanu.
Rama, I have held your lotus feet both with both my hands firmly and strongly.
Neevu nannu vadani ekkadiki povadaniki veelu kaadu.
It is not possible for you to go away from me, Rama.
Nannu vide chikada pekura Ramayya Rama Kodanda Rama పట్టాది రామా నన్ను వీడచికూరా నే వదలను.
డోంట్ లీవ్ మీ ఓ రామయ్య రామ, కోదండ రామ అండ్ పట్టాది రామ అండ్ గోవే. ఐఎమ్ నాట్ గోయింగ్ టు లీవ్ ఓ రామ.
నీవు ఏదో ఒక ప్లాన్ వేస్తున్నావు.
యూ సీమ్ టు బి మేకింగ్ ఎ ప్లాన్.
కానీ నేను ఆ ప్లాన్ను అంగీకరించను.
బట్ ఐ డోంట్ అగ్రీ ఫర్ యువర్ ప్లాన్ ఓరామ.
ఈ వైభవాలు, ఈ యొక్క సిరి సంపదలు నా హస్తంలో పెట్టి నీవు తప్పించుకుని పోవడానికి చూస్తున్నావా
రామ? యూ వాంట్ కీప్ ఆల్ దిస్ వెల్త్ ఇన్ మై హ్యాండ్స్ అండ్ అలౌ మై గ్రిప్ గోవే అండ్ యూ వాంట్ గోవే ఫ్రమ్ మీ.
ఇవన్నీ నేను స్వీకరించాలంటే నీ పాదాలను వదలాలి, అప్పుడు నేను దీనికి చేతులు పట్టాలి.
ఇఫ్ ఐ హావ్ టు యాక్సెప్ట్ ఆల్ దిస్ వెల్త్ ఐ హావ్ టు లీవ్ యువర్ ఫీట్ అండ్ యాక్సెప్ట్ దెమ్ విత్ బోత్ ద హ్యాండ్స్.
నేను వీటికి చేతులు పట్టను, నీ పాదంనే చేతితో పడతానన్నాడు.
ఐ వుడ్ నెవర్ యాక్సెప్ట్ ఆల్ దిస్ వెల్త్.
త్యాగరాజు యొక్క నిజమైనటువంటి యొక్క త్యాగ భూమి, త్యాగ భావం.
దిస్ ఈజ్ ద గ్రేట్ సాక్రిఫైసింగ్ ఫీలింగ్ ఆఫ్ త్యాగరాజా హూ హ్యాడ్ దట్ నేమ్.
విద్యార్థులారా, మీరు ఈ లౌకిక జగత్తునందు, ఈ సమయమునందు ఈ విధమైనటువంటి అవకాశములు మీరు కల్పించుకుని అనేక మంది అనుభవజ్ఞులు, పెద్దలు, ప్రబోధలు మీరు ఈ 10 దినముల నుంచి వింటున్నారు.
డియర్ స్టూడెంట్స్, యూ హ్యాడ్ ఎ వెరీ ఫైన్ అండ్ యునిక్ ఆపర్చునిటీ ఆఫ్ కలెక్టింగ్ హియర్ అండ్ లిసనింగ్ టు పీపుల్ హూ హ్యాడ్ ఎ లాట్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్.
దీన్ని మీరు సార్థకం చేసుకుంటే అంతే చాలు.
If you can sanctify this, then that is enough.
మీరు విన్నవి, కన్నవి ఏ ఒకటి రెండైనా కూడాను ఆచరణలో పెట్టి నీ జీవితంలో ఆదర్శవంతమైన దాన్ని లోకానికి అందించండి.
Among many things which you have heard, at least one or two what you have heard, one or two what you have seen, practice them.
ఈ ఆత్మతత్వములకు లౌకిక ప్రమాణములన్నీ కూడాను మనం స్వీకరించాము.
Even in this, with reference to this Atma Tattva, we have collected all the worldly things.
దీనిని తిరిగి వేదములకు కూడాను సమన్వయమైనటువంటి మార్గాన్ని కూడాను మనము విచారిస్తాం.
We will have to just also think in terms of Veda and how things are expounded in Veda.
భారతీయులకు అనాది కాలము నుండి అన్ని విధములకు కూడాను ఆదేశాన్ని అందిస్తున్నది వేదమే.
It is the Vedas which have been giving ideals for Bharatiyas right from very ancient days.
ఇది కేవలము ఒక వ్యక్తిలచో ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటిది కాదు.
Veda has not emanated from an individual.
ఏక పండితుడితో లిఖించబడినటువంటిది కాదు.
It is not even written by scholars.
ఇది అపౌరుషేయమైనటువంటిది.
This is apaurusheya.
ఇది సాక్షాత్ శబ్దం నుండి ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటిది.
దిస్ హ్యాస్ ఎమినేటెడ్ డైరెక్ట్లీ ఫ్రమ్ ద ప్రైమోడియల్ సౌండ్.
ఒక్కొక్క పన్నమునందు 33 కోట్ల అక్షరాలు ఉంటున్నాయి.
ఇన్ ఈచ్ వర్డ్ దేర్ ఆర్ 33 క్రోర్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్.
కానీ ఇన్ని విధమైనటువంటి అక్షరములు ఏ విధంగా అభివృద్ధి అయినాయి?
హౌ ఆర్ దే బ్రాట్ టుగెదర్?
ఉన్నది కొన్ని అక్షరములే, విన్నది కూడా.
There are only a few letters in a sense.
ఇది అష్టాక్షరములే.
There are only 8 letters.
దీనిని అనేకంగా కూడాను అవి ఆవరిస్తూ పోయాయి.
They have been changed and converted into a number of
English అక్షరాల్లో 26 అక్షరాలు ఉంటుంటాయి.
In English language there are 26 alphabet.
కానీ 26 అక్షరాల్లో పల్లే ఇంతింత పెద్ద పుస్తకాలు రాస్తుంటారు.
With the help of these 26 letters alone, such voluminous...
ఈ అక్షరాన్ని వదలి ఇంకొకటి మనం రాయడానికి వీలు లేదు.
Leaving these 26 alphabet, you cannot use any other letter at all.
4 వైర్లు ఉండేటువంటి వైలిన్ లోపలే 400 రాగాలంతా పాడవచ్చు.
There may be only 4 threads, but 400 ragas can be sung with the help of those 4 threads alone.
కనుక సారస్వతుడు అనేటువంటి వాడు ఆకాచాటా తాపా యేస అని 8 అక్షరాలు విన్నాడు.
There are these 8 letters, A, Cha, Ta, Ta, Pa, Ya, Sha.
A, Ka, Ta, Ta, Pa, Ya, Sha.
A, Ka, Cha, Ta, Ta, Pa.
Kya baad? ఈ విధంగా 8 అక్షరాలతో పల్లె ఈ అష్టదిక్కులు కూడాను వ్యాపించి సర్వేశ్వర్యాన్ని కూడాను అందులో ఇమిడ్చి జగత్తుకు అందించింది.
Within the scope of these 8 letters, the entire literature is brought in. and is made to spread to all the eight corners of the world.
వినికిడి చేతనే లభించినటువంటి కనుకనే దీనికి శృతి అని పేరు వచ్చింది.
This has got the name Smruti because by hearing this is obtained.
ఈ శృతి ద్వారా మానవుడు కనుగొన్నటువంటి ఒక సత్యాన్ని, మానవుడు ఆచరించి తరించినటువంటి మార్గాన్ని మనము మున్ముందు వేదము యొక్క ఆదర్శముల వల్ల తెలుసుకోవటానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తాం.
అండ్ వీల్ ట్రై టు అండర్స్టాండ్ మోర్ ఎలాబొరేట్లీ ది మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ ది స్మృతి, హౌ దీస్ థింగ్స్ ఆర్ ఆబ్టైన్ అండ్ వాట్ ఆర్ ద థింగ్స్ విచ్ హావ్ బీన్ కన్వేడ్ టు ది హ్యూమానిటీ ఎట్ లార్జ్ ఇన్ ఫ్యూచర్.
So that's the last part of that discourse, and Goswami is ending with an introduction for the next discourse. Mm-hmm. Goswami is saying that we've spoken at length about all these things. Let us see what the Vedas have to say about these things. Mm-hmm. So that should be the theme of the next discourse.
Yeah.
Going back to this discourse, Swami starts with that the name of Tungabhadra,
yeah.
You know, the name given to the body. And it's very interesting, you know, when Swami speaks at length about, in this discourse about self-knowledge, about saying that you're not this body, you're beyond this body, this is Kshetra and you're Kshetrajna. Eventually, Swami ends with the idea that put this body to good use. Put this body to, in a way that it benefits the society. Use right. It in a way it benefits the people around you. That's a very interesting thing, because even in the discourse about the body, Swami said that, you know, throughout it was, you're not the body, you're not the senses, you're not the mind, but use it for the benefit of the society.
Mm.
Right? Because that itself is a means of you transcending this body. Right.
And in a sense, he has already brought in the third path, which the karma yoga, you know.
Right.
So he's saying that because this body is such a receptacle of divinity, such a very sacred thing called divinity is present in this body, and to honor that sacredness, the best way to utilize this body is in the service of others. And he says here, no, that undertake such noble activities as will bring about the welfare of society. And to bring in this example, like he gives the example of Saint Tyagaraja over here, and he's stringing together two of Tyagaraja's very famous compositions. One is this Nidhi Chala Sukama. So that is where he asks, like, if I have wealth on one hand and the lotus feet on the other, the proximity to the lotus feet on the other, like, which shall I take? Like, which shall I choose? Which will give me more happiness? And he himself gives the answer as he realizes that all these riches that have been placed in front of him, they are merely to distract him from the beauty of the lotus feet itself.
Right.
And he says, this is a test that you have actually put in front of me.
Right. In fact, it's a, if you look at the example of Tyagaraja, the way Swami is giving it here, putting it in the context of, let's say there is a person who is blessed with a talent, or, you know, if you are an artist, if you are a person who is able to sing, how much of us are able to use that talent only for self-satisfaction? You know, we have self-satisfaction. Of course, that is the final end product of whatever we do. But we attach the self-satisfaction to the accolades we would get it from the people whom we offer it to.
Yes.
You know, every talent, you know, be it if you're a writer, if you're a speaker, if you're a singer, if you're good at playing an instrument, it's always like we play it, we offer it to somebody else, and they are happy with it, and then they praise you, and then your self-satisfaction and happiness comes out of that.
Yes.
But it is not purely from that talent which you have.
Actually,
what Swami represents from somebody like Tyagaraja is that, are you able to find that happiness which comes purely from the act of doing it for yourself?
Yeah. You know, Prem, like, I was actually just debating whether or not to talk about one personal experience that I had in this.
Okay.
But the moment you brought up talents, I thought, okay, sure sign that I have to speak about it. It was like once sitting in the Kulwant Hall, and there was a program being given by the students, and Swami was very fond of this particular set of students who would sing Carnatic songs to him every darshan session. And naturally, like me watching, I'm just there in the audience, and Swami is showering them with so much attention. My mind started thinking about how I wish I was in their place, getting all that attention from Bhagwan. Then I began thinking, I wish I had some talent like that, which would attract the Lord's attention. And again the mind started traveling, you know, what kind of talent? I wish I was such a good singer. or you know, I was somebody like so intelligent that you know, I would be such a reputed person, or maybe I was a person of power.
Okay.
And in whatever way possible, but you know, I wish that I would, that would grant me Swami's proximity. All the time, like Swami is seated in front of me and all these thoughts are occurring to me. Suddenly something very deep within me, it said, like, okay, how about that, you know, none of these talents are present. You don't have that much intelligence, you're not such a good singer, you don't have any power. But then you have, supposing that gives you even more proximity to the Lord, would you take that? And suddenly in my mind I chose, yes, that is what I would take. That is the greatest treasure there is. And believe me, Swami at that moment, he suddenly turned in my direction, looked at me, and he choked with emotion, you know. I could see that it was like, for me, it was a confirmation that this is the choice for each one of us. This is a choice that actually makes the self happy, because Swami is none other than the self. So it was time and again, when, of course, the temptation will come up again and again. But for me, this is that one milestone incident, you know, that brings me back to this fact that this is what Swami wants from each one of us, to keep choosing Him, keep choosing Him, keep choosing Him, even when the world offers so many varied choices for us.
Right, you know, that especially when we were students, we did that. I wouldn't say it's a mistake, because it's a path which led us to a better understanding, but it's a kind of folly which we went into, and a thing which we did repeatedly. You know, every time we had a chance to ask Swami something, or, you know, Swami says, tell what you want.
Mm.
We've seen boys would go up to Swami and say, Swami, I want to sing in your presence.
Yes.
No, mm. Swami, I want to, you know, there are boys who said, Swami, I want to do mimicry in front of you.
Mm.
Thinking that if I ask for this, this will lead to this and that will lead to that, and finally I'll get proximity to Swami.
Mm.
You know, it's a lesson for all of us, because we never know what course, what action which we, you know, indulge in will take us to. What we had to ask for, Swami, I want to be near you. Swami, I want you, I want your love.
Yes.
But we thought that if I ask for this, then if I get this, then I will be able to earn Swami's love.
Yes.
I think even the idea of many devotees, you know, have this complaint that, you know, I've never had any supernatural experience, you know, after coming to Swami. I've never had Vibhuti coming in the pictures in my house.
Mm.
I've never had Swami materialize objects for me. You know, if you look at it, here are experiences. The very idea behind an experience is that it gives you faith.
Mm.
And instead of going to God and saying that, God, give me faith, we are saying that, give me all these experiences so that from these experiences I can get faith.
Very beautiful.
You know, why don't you go and say, God, give me faith. That's what I want.
Fantastic. Yes.
And I think that's what Swami is saying here, that it's a really beautiful experience that you narrated, because it's a very important thing. That's a choice which all of us have to make.
Mm.
I remember there's a talk which the author of a book, I'm not getting his name right now, the Prayer of the Frog and the Song of the Bird, Anthony DeMello.
Anthony DeMello.
Yeah,
yes.
He says in a talk, he says, you know, it's a congregation of youngsters, most of them university graduates. So he says, if I tell you today, I will give you joy. I'll give you pure joy.
Mm.
But only thing is, you have to just go back home and tear that graduation certificate of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And throw away all your certificates of this one. You'll tell, no, I cannot do all that. He says, because, you know, you don't realize that joy can be got beyond that.
Yes.
You have chosen the path and you say, I want to find joy only through this path.
Through this path, yeah. And you're so entwined to that path that you don't even want to leave it when the offer of joy is given to you.
Right. Yeah. I think the clarity of thought is something which is very important, which Swami is talking about here.
Absolutely. And I just like listening to Swami as he closed, and two thoughts occurred to me. One, of course, Swami is talking about the Vedas and how the Vedas are like their aparashya, that is, they're not really come from rational thought or deliberate thought. It is something that has come from deep within the word itself.
Right.
He says the source of the Vedas. And I was reminded of something that Swami himself has said, that it is in the depths of silence that the voice of God is heard. And the Vedas represent that voice. When everything has been abandoned, very thought has been abandoned, and what arises from deep within, that is, he says, that is the Shruti, that is the Veda.
Right.
And the final thing that he says, it's to the students, and he says, this summer course is a golden opportunity for you. And I was just thinking, for us to reflect in this particular program, and for the listeners to really to sit and think about what was Swami's message during those golden days, you know, of this summer course. I can just imagine that ambience and the thrill that those people would have gone through. And I somehow feel that we are going through the same thing today. As I listened to Swami's discourse, I just felt the total benediction that is there when you're able to reflect on such words of wisdom after so many years, even though we were not physically present for that. And making this available to all of us, I think hats off to all of you for this fantastic work.
I think that is the greatest boon a Swami has given to people of this age. He has allowed himself to be recorded. He has allowed himself to be documented.
Documented in such detail, no other avatar.
Because he knew that these are lessons like the Vedas, which would always be in the
in the air
for anybody who can tune in. But Swami said, I know you guys will not come up to that and sit in that silence and hear my voice. So at least record it, and here you have the MP3. I think we should thank Swami for that, because as you said, these are eternal messages, and to sit a good 24 years after it was delivered and to be able to hear it again and to reflect it in our own time, because when I say time, if we were present there, might not have been in a frame of mind which would have enabled us to absorb as much as we are absorbing today.
Absolutely.
So for that, we should be grateful that we are able to listen to it now and listen to it again and again. So thanking Swami for that, and thanking you, Hari, for joining me on this program. And I offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet. Dear listeners, thank you for being with us. We'll join you again next week, 7:30 p.m. Thursday, for the next episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. We'll leave you with Bishu for the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And incidentally, you're going to be joined again by Hari for that program, because he is also featuring in that segment. Thank you for being with us. Jai Sai Ram.
Govinda Krishna Jai, Gopala Krishna Jai, Gopala Bala Bala Radha Krishna Jai, Go. Govinda Krishna Jai, Gopala Krishna Jai, Gopala Bala Bala Radha Krishna Jai, Go. Krishna Jai, Krishna 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 Jai. Krishna Jai, Krishna Jai, Krishna Jai, Krishna 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 Jai. Thank you.